Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to the Slam and Jam here at the Athletic NBA Show. Hey, go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get the Athletic for a discounted rate. It's a great time to subscribe. We have March Madness coming up next week. Conference tournaments obviously going on. Lots of great work there. The NBA, we're getting closer to playoff time. You're going to want that subscription. And you can also listen to this show ad-free, which is a great benefit. So go to theathletic.com/NBA show. And get the Athletic today. With me, as always, is my good friend Alex Spears. Alex, tell me what happened in the NBA this week.
Well, Andrew, it all started last Friday night with one of the best wins of the Lakers season. Playing Milwaukee in LA without LeBron James, the Lakers withstood a 34-14-12 line from Giannis to beat the Bucks 123-122. The Lakers were led by D'Angelo Russell, who scored 44 points in the game, including 21 in the fourth quarter, and the go-ahead floater from mid-range with 5.2 seconds left. D'Lo was 17 of 25 from the field with 9 three-pointers. While he would only score 19 points combined over his next two games, he is still averaging 22-3-6 over his last 25 games while shooting 45% from three. On Saturday, the Celtics got their first of two wins over the Suns this week. The Celtics came into the game on a two-game losing streak, only their second of the season. Boston was able to avoid their first three-game losing streak of the season by beating Phoenix 117-107, despite Kevin Durant going off for 45-10-6. Whatever panic there might have been in Boston after their two straight losses has quickly been forgotten, as they are now on a four-game winning streak and have won 14 of their last 16. One particularly hot Celtic right now is Jaylen Brown, who over his last nine games is averaging just under 30 points per game, including 37 on Thursday night in the other Boston Phoenix game this week. On Sunday, the Houston Rockets were in Sacramento and had a scary moment when Alperen Şengün came down awkwardly and appeared to twist every part of his right leg it shouldn't. So somehow, he escaped the fall without a major injury, but will likely be sidelined for the rest of the season. Despite losing Şengün, the Rockets pulled off the upset of the Kings 112-104 and have continued to win. They are now on a four-game winning streak, tied for the current longest streak in the NBA. Could they make a run at the play-in? Probably not. But how about this? They have a positive point differential as an 11th seed. Wow. That seems pretty cool.
That's cool.
Also on Sunday, we had the first real basketball game of the season. A game between the Sixers and Knicks ended 79-73 in favor of the Knicks. It was the first game since 2016 where both teams failed to score 80 points. On Monday, Phoenix, who we already mentioned lost twice to Boston this week, did pick up a nice win against the Cavs in Cleveland. Phoenix's big three combined for 88 points in the 117-111 win. Things have gotten a little shaky for the Suns as of late, having won only five of their last 11 games. That stretch brought them down to the play-in range, where they currently sit a half game back of the Kings, who are in sixth. The good news is that Phoenix has no more games left against Boston. The bad news is that of their remaining 16 games, half are against the top five teams in the West.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. On Tuesday, two of those top five teams met in LA. The Minnesota Timberwolves, who are now playing without Karl Anthony Towns, had a massive comeback win against the Clippers. After getting down by 22 with 5 minutes left in the second quarter, the Wolves would outscore the Clippers by 40 points from that point forward. The Wolves were led once again by Anthony Edwards, who dropped 37 in the win. Despite losing Towns, the Wolves have mostly kept pace, only a game back of the Nuggets, which is pretty impressive considering the Nuggets have won 10 of their last 11. Mm. On Wednesday, we had a crazy one between the Bulls and Pacers, which ended in an overtime win for Chicago, 132-129. Miles Turner hit back-to-back threes in the final 90 seconds of regulation to give the Pacers a three-point lead. But DeMar DeRozan scores five in the final 45 seconds to get the game to overtime. Then he scores nine more in overtime, giving him 46 for the game. In the clutch this season, DeRozan has 52-50-87 shooting splits and is only 4 points behind Steph Curry for most clutch points this season. The Bulls will likely remain as the ninth seed, however, now 4 games back of Miami in eighth, despite Miami having lost 4 in a row. Finally, on Thursday night, it was still a good game, but it could have been even better. Dallas-OKC, a potential first-round matchup, was the late game on TNT, but lost some of its luster when we learned Luka Doncic would be sitting with a sore hamstring. Kyrie Irving made it interesting, though, keeping it close throughout, en route to a 36-point, 12-assist night. For the Thunder, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander chalked up another 30-point game, this one being 31 points on only 16 shots. The Thunder ended up winning 126-119, but more importantly, a very fun streak came to an end during the game. Daniel Gafford missed a putback attempt early in the game, which was the first time he had missed a shot in 34 tries. Gafford's streak of 33 consecutive makes is only behind Wilt Chamberlain's 35 straight as the longest streak in NBA history. What a week it was, Andrew.
What a week indeed. Yeah, I got to see the Gafford streak end right in front of my face last night. It ended so fast because it's like one of the things that's like top of mind as I'm at this Thunder Mavs game.
You could have seen history if he had just gotten what he needed. He needed 3 shots.
It ended going into the game. It ended so fast.
It was kind of a bummer.
And I will say this about Kyrie last night. Kyrie was incredible. He was incredible. He brought everything to the table last night. And I think this Mavericks team is really dangerous come playoff time if he can play like that. Also, he's getting into it with fans. He got 2 fans kicked out. He was just on one last night.
Really?
Shout out to Kyrie, impressive. Who was just incredible last night in OKC. All right, Al, it's almost tournament time. If you want to know more about the NCAA tournament, you should go to theathletic.com/NBA show. Also, check out John Hollinger's article that he wrote at The Athletic. He wrote a really great piece. It's about the players to watch in the NCAA tournament. And I'm kind of taking a little bit from John's piece, and I'm putting my little spin on it and adding a different player in. I'm going to tell you guys the top 5 players that you should watch in the NCAA tournament. Before we get to those players, let's talk about one of those teams. And with that, we're going to use our BetMGM line of the week, brought to you by BetMGM. Colorado plays Washington State later tonight with the Buffs favored by 2.5. Very, very interesting game where you can watch one of the players that I'm about to mention here and my top 5 players to watch in the NCAA tournament. A little bit of this was spawned because I got a text from a friend last night that said, March Madness is in a week, and I don't know any of the players that are in it. Like, I could not name 1 player that's going to be in March Madness. And this is like a huge sports fan. He said I could name 4 of the college players that are on the women's side, but I can't name one of the guys. So this list is for you.
Okay.
Jacoby Walter, who plays for the Baylor Bears, is going to be in the tournament. He's a freshman, 6'5 guard. He's had a really nice season for them. 14 points, 4.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists. Pretty good athlete, and just a shooter. The dude is going to put up threes. He takes 6 threes per game, which is really pretty difficult to do in college. So he's a fun player. He's been a consistent contributor as a freshman. And he's going to be probably a lottery pick in the draft. So Jacoby Walter is my first one. Number 4, which is a more well-known player, and he's more well-known for what happens kind of in the in-betweens or after games. Kyle Filipowski at Duke has been kind of a villain of this season, but a really, really good player. Now, the Duke Blue Devils did lose to NC State in somewhat embarrassing fashion, and Kyle talked about that after the game, but he had a great game. 28 points, 14 rebounds. Really good player, really smart player that I think will be a top 10 pick in this upcoming draft. I think there's a lot of different teams that he could fit with. To me, he's a guy that can come in right away and be a good rebounder, a pretty good ball mover, and I think he can score. So his shooting has been off and on, especially from three. He hasn't really taken all that many threes lately. He did take 6 against North Carolina, but hadn't really taken a whole lot otherwise. But a really good, like, all-around big man that I think will contribute at the NBA level, that I think could have a really big tournament as a sophomore. Number 3. This guy's kind of taken taken the country by storm a little bit. Dalton Kincaid. Have you watched Dalton Kincaid, Alex, at Tennessee?
Yeah, I watched the Kentucky game.
Yeah, so fifth-year transfer from Northern Colorado. Just an absolute bucket of a score. Had 40 points against Kentucky. 40 points, four boards, an assist, and a steal. Like, the guy is just a great shooter. I talked about Jacoby Walter taking a lot of threes. This dude took 15 threes against Kentucky. He went 6 of 15 at Kentucky. Just an insane amount of threes that this guy can get off, which just makes you think, like, this guy, it's going to translate. He's got pretty good size. He's 6'6". And I think this guy could be a contributor at the NBA level, but also somebody that could light up the NCAA tournament. So definitely like an older guy that I think is ready to, one, contribute at the NBA level. But if you're into watching March Madness, like, flip on Tennessee, because this guy can be electric. Number two, Cody Williams. First of all, the fun fact that everybody knows about him, this is Jalen Williams from Oklahoma City's younger brother. But he, like, looks the part of an NBA player. 6'8", can shoot, can pass, can dribble. A really good player. He plays for Colorado. He tends to kind of fade in and out a little bit. His last couple games have not been particularly great. But a guy that can really score the basketball. He's got good length, a good athlete. Somebody that you should watch, because I think he's probably going in the top five of this next draft. And then the number one player, this was John Hollinger's number one player too. Again, go check out his article at theathletic.com/NBA show. Reed Sheppard, who is just taken the country by storm. Like, he's been so good. In that game against Tennessee, which was such a fun game, he had 27 points on 14 shots. It's like the efficiency is just outrageous. He comes off the bench, which I think is and this is, John and I agree on this, it's a little crazy that this guy still comes off the bench for Kentucky. But he's a 6'2 freshman guard. Both his parents played at Kentucky too, which is kind of cool. But comes off the bench for Kentucky, and he just is a lights out shooter. 52% from three. He's 84% from the line. He's only 6'2". So when you see him, like, he's not Cody Williams. You know, he's not even Dalton Kincaid, who's like a bigger guy. He's 6'2", and he looks 6'2", but he's a competitor. Like, the guy just competes every single possession. He's really fun to watch. Pretty good defender for his size, and can just shoot lights out. He's somebody, too, that I think could swing games in this tournament. So that's my five players: Jacoby Walter, Kyle Filipowski, Dalton Kincaid, Cody Williams, and Reed Sheppard, who I think will all be in the lottery. Some of these guys will be in the top five. Some people think that Reed Sheppard could go number one in this draft.
Talking about KOC, that was like a big little mini earthquake this week.
Yeah.
He put him number two on his big board and then had him number one in his mock draft.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little much, because I think it's really tough to be 6'2" in the NBA. But also, I don't know, like, the guy can play. Like, that's like, you watch him, you just like, know for sure this dude can play. Because he can shoot the basketball, he competes. If you watch him and you watch Kentucky, like, you'll fall in love with this guy too. He's great.
Well, that's very exciting, Andrew. I'm excited. We're ramping up. I mean, we got March Madness coming. Playoff basketball is going to be here before we know it.
Yep,
feels so good. But before we get to the NBA playoffs, we have to make it through hours and hours of playoff preview podcasts. We're going to hear the same arguments made over and over again about certain teams.
True.
Arguments against why these teams should be considered serious contenders. They will be repeated so often, you'll be forced to believe them.
Yeah.
But are they true? To find that out, I'm bringing back a segment called Dunk or Junk. Very exciting. Where I will examine one of the common arguments against a supposed contender and decide whether that argument is a slam dunk or whether it is junk and needs to be thrown out. This week, I'm going to start with one of the more popular arguments you're going to hear this playoff season. The Oklahoma City Thunder cannot be taken seriously as contenders because they do not rebound. They are allergic to bounds. Now, this is a slightly more specific point than the more general OKC is too small argument. Mm-hmm. But this one is better for dunker junk because I can actually do something with it. Mm-hmm. What I can do is look back at all the worst rebounding teams in NBA playoff history and see if any of them were able to succeed despite having this fatal flaw.
Yeah.
So first, let's start with the facts. OKC has the third worst offensive rebound percentage and the third worst defensive rebound percentage in the league. They don't like bounds, no matter what they look like. Up and down the court, not a fan. I decided to focus on defensive rebounds because I think you can partially explain the lack of offensive rebounding as part of their overall scheme.
Yeah.
The Thunder like to get back on defense. It's part of the reason why they are top three in both half court and transition D. Mm-hmm. Does that completely excuse them from being a bottom three offensive rebounding team? No. But the fact that they are such an efficient offense and have such a good defense helps reduce the negative impact of them not grabbing bounds after their own misses. Defensive rebounding is a different story, though, because there's no obvious benefit to giving the opponent another shot. And schematically, the Thunder like to pack the paint and then rush out to shooters. So a lot of times there are a lot of Thunder players around the basket. They just haven't been able to consistently grab those bounds. So I focused on their defensive rebounding rate, which is currently 68.9%. Look back through history to see if I could find similarly awful defensive rebounding teams who succeeded in the postseason. Now, the first point is that rebounding has changed over time. As an example, over the last five seasons, including this one, there have been nine teams with a defensive rebound percentage under 70%. Hmm. In the 1996-97 season, the furthest back the NBA.com stats go, there were zero teams with a defensive rebound percentage higher than 70%.
Wow.
The emphasis on offensive rebounding has certainly declined over the past few decades, which is why someone like Mitchell Robinson is so interesting and fun to watch.
Yeah.
The point, though, is that I didn't want to only look at teams that had an under 70% defensive rebounding percentage because the further I went back, the more of those teams there would be. Instead, I focused on the five worst defensive rebounding teams from each season going back to 96-97. So 27 seasons, five teams per year, 135 teams in total. 89 of those teams missed the playoffs. Not surprising. Bad rebounding teams are usually bad. Mm-hmm. And that fact alone is one of the reasons why it's hard for people to imagine a bad rebounding team having success. Another 31 of those teams didn't make it out of the first round, leaving us with only 14 teams who made it past the first round. Another seven lost in round two, three in the conference finals, one lost in the finals, and three of them were champions. So let's take a look at those seven teams who made it to the conference finals, since getting that far would unquestionably be considered a success for the Thunder. I don't think the four teams that made it to the finals, three who won it, are very good comps. We're talking about the 2018 Warriors, the 2017 Warriors, the 2014 Heat, and the 2013 Heat. So the KD Warriors and the LeBron Heat. Hey, it's cool to have something in common with those teams, but I wouldn't be betting on the Thunder because you believe they are continuing the tradition established by the KD Warriors and the LeBron Heat.
Yeah.
Those teams were anomalies, okay? I'm not going to compare that. The other three teams, though, all of whom lost in the conference finals, are more interesting. 2017 Celtics, 2015 Rockets, 2010 Suns. Now, I don't see a ton of similarities with the Celtics team. That was Jaylen Brown's rookie season. It was one of Isaiah Thomas's all-star seasons. It was kind of like this blip for them when he was with the team, those two all-star seasons. But I find the Rockets and Suns pretty interesting because the Harden Rockets and Nash Suns appeared on this list multiple times, four for the Rockets and three for the Suns. In other words, similar to OKC, they were teams that were strong in the regular season despite being poor rebounding teams. And for those teams, they were consistently strong regular season teams.
Yeah.
They were teams that were willing to sacrifice the rebounding battle a lot of nights because it was a trade-off that allowed them to play the unique way they wanted to play. And the way they played was so different from the other teams in the league that it changed how people thought about basketball. You know, those Nash Suns and the Harden Rockets teams, I mean, those are kind of like touchpoint teams over the last two decades of NBA basketball. They, of course, had the same coach, Mike D'Antoni, but they were very different teams. You know, the two stars, Nash and Harden, didn't exactly play the same way.
Yeah.
But both teams succeeded despite not being good rebounding teams. And if you look at their playoff history in those seasons when they were bottom five in defensive rebounding, I mean, they ran up against some absolute juggernauts. For the Rockets, It was the Warriors three times and then the eventual champion Lakers in the bubble. Mm-hmm. For the Suns, it was the Spurs twice and then the eventual champion Lakers in 2010.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to take the pessimistic view, maybe Denver will be to OKC what Golden State was to Houston or what San Antonio was to Phoenix. Mm-hmm. You know, despite their innovative styles, maybe Houston and Phoenix's willingness to ignore some basic beliefs about how a successful NBA team should play ultimately hurt them in the playoffs. And maybe that will be true for OKC as well. The reality, though, is that unless you have a LeBron or a Steph or a Duncan or maybe a Wembanyama, you probably aren't going to win a championship, especially in a small market. And if you do win one, it's probably not going to be because you are playing basketball the way everyone expects you to. You know, if an NBA team in Oklahoma City is going to win a championship, they're probably going to need to do things differently, similar to those Suns and Rockets teams. So it's not that you should ignore the rebounding. It's entirely possible that it could end up being a problem in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But similar to those Suns and Rockets teams, you also shouldn't ignore the reasons why OKC has been successful and how that unique style may still allow them to have playoff success despite the rebounding issues. And also, to cap this whole discussion off, post-All-Star break, 12 games, guess who is seventh in defensive rebounding percentage? Whoa. That's right, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Whoa. So they can't do it. They just don't a lot of the times. Okay, so are OKC's rebounding issues being a fatal flaw in the playoffs a slam dunk or junk? Well, if your criteria is them actually winning the championship this season, it's probably a slam dunk because they're probably not going to win. And when they lose, you know, if they lose to the Nuggets in the playoffs, their size and rebounding will probably be a factor.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're just talking about their ability to make the conference finals, and at that point, like four teams make the conference finals, I would say those teams are contenders.
Yeah.
I feel like there's enough history with similarly unique teams like the Harden Rockets and Nash Suns making deep playoff runs while not being great rebounding teams that I can't call it a slam dunk. Like those teams, the rebounding is a problem, but so are the Thunder. And so in terms of them making it to the conference finals, I'd say it's junk. I'd say it's not a good enough reason to just write them off immediately. If you want to write them off winning the championship, I mean, listen, only one team's going to win. You're probably going to be right. But in general, I think that that argument gets a little bit overrated while still having some reality, especially when it comes to specific matchups in the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that it is junk. And one thing that people aren't considering, and maybe people think this is dumb, but I do think like this is something that I asked Mark Degnall about yesterday before the game, is that they haven't used the other Jalen Williams a whole lot with Chet. And if you're not watching a lot of Thunder, you probably look at his averages and think like, okay, whatever. Like, this guy's a whatever player.
Who cares?
But it is a lineup they can go to where they can stay pretty versatile on both ends. And I think it's something that they will use. If they play a bigger team, you can count on them using Jay Will, the other Jalen Williams, who played at Arkansas, with Chet and use Chet more as a roamer rather than a guy who's just going to like try to like stand up and defend guys like Sabonis or Jokic or guys like that. So there is another look that they haven't gone to very much that I think come playoff time that we will see more. So I think that could also change things a bit. It's just like they have a little bit more versatility than people give them credit for. And some of that is that they just don't use it enough. A good game to watch is the Miami Heat game from last week. I think it was last Friday, where they put him on Bam Adebayo, and he was really good on Bam. Jay Will was. So just another thing to consider when you're thinking about like the versatility of the Thunder.
I wonder how many people listening thought you were about to go on a Bismack Biyombo rant before you brought up Jay Will. I mean, the thing with Jay Will is that, yes, they can go to those lineups, but on the other side of the court, like, his threes have to be falling, because last year I think he was shot 40%. This year it's down to 36%. If you have him on the court at the same time as Giddy, like, I think it's just going to screw up the offense.
So I think,
like,
he's in place of Giddy. I think he's in place of Giddy for those lineups.
Yeah. Okay.
Which gives
almost has to be.
Yeah. I think that's the move. And you stay pretty big because Shea's big, Dort plays big. The other Jalen Williams is big and has long arms. So, yeah. To me, I think that's like another card to play for the Thunder that most people aren't considering. And I don't blame you. Like, if you're not considering that, no, I'm not sitting here saying you're an idiot. Like, I think that most people are not thinking about that unless you're super in the weeds with this Thunder team. But it is a look that I think that we will see and that they will use come playoff time.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Andrew, it is time for the Wheel of Fandom, our weekly segment where we spin a wheel, it lands on a team, and we become fans of that team for the next week. Last week, the wheel landed on the Orlando Magic. The Magic came into the week, winners of 5 straight and 8 of their last 9. Would the good run continue, or would the Wheel of Fandom throw them completely off track? Unfortunately, it was the latter, as the Magic went 1-2 this week, including a loss to the Knicks that saw them score only 74 points, their lowest total of the season, by 18 points. They also lost to the Pacers before picking up a win against the Nets. The good news is the Magic are 38-28, still the 5th seed in the East, with a 2-game lead over the teams in the play-in. Per Cleaning Glass, the Magic have the 4th-ranked defense and the 24th-ranked offense. Andrew, if our favorite team is the Magic, who is our guest?
We've got our guy Jonathan Osborne back on the pod. He's the host of the 6-Man Show. It's an Orlando Magic podcast. Welcome to the show. Hey, I want to give you guys a shout-out. You guys had Paolo Banchero on your show yesterday. Really cool. You should go listen to it. It's just cool to have, you know, superstars on podcasts like this. So go check it out. Jonathan, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us back on, fellas. It's been a much better year for us this year comparative to the last time that we spoke. And yeah, the opportunity with Paolo Banchero was just really, really great. Appreciate the Magic PR team for helping us make that happen. Was a dream come true. Like, from a Magic fan perspective, there are maybe, you know, 2 or 3 guys, you know, that could be deemed as like a bigger sort of interview and opportunity for us. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. Appreciate the shout out. And again, thanks for having me back.
Well, it wasn't the greatest week for the Magic, with the Knicks game being the lowest point total for the Magic's offense. The lack of shooting has been an obvious issue, with the Magic ranking dead last in 3-pointers made. Can most of the offensive issues this season be chalked up just to a lack of shooting, or are there other major issues that like aren't as obvious?
Yeah, I think it's partly that, like the lack of shooting. But I also just think like the lack of a reliable, like, you know, traditional point guard. You know, Markelle Fultz has been in and out of the lineup all year with the knee tendonitis that's been going on since the first couple of weeks of the season. And even when he has been healthy, like, his lack of shooting definitely is a factor as well, just in terms of spacing. So, the shooting, we've been talking about that for, it seems like, a decade here, you know, in Orlando. But this year being the last year of Markelle Fultz's contract, that's sort of a big question. Like, what do the Magic do next year? We've seen a big change recently to the starting lineup where they've opted for more shooting, and it seems like it is helping. But at times, the offense still just does bog down. And I think having a more traditional point guard could be a big help there.
So despite these offensive struggles, this season has already been a huge success, with Magic looking to make their first playoffs in 4 seasons, with most of the same guys who were on the team last year. Of those returning players, who do you feel like has improved the most this season?
It's been Jalen Suggs, far and away. He has been such a revelation shooting the basketball this year. I think it was 21% his rookie year, 32% last year, and he's been hovering right around 38, 39% for most of this year. And just the threat that he has become from behind the arc, it has really been a pleasant surprise. I will be the first to tell you that I always believed in Jalen Suggs. A lot of people the last couple of years have been quick to label him a bust. But we saw the flashes from him the first couple of years. It was just, if he can have a healthy offseason, which he did have last summer, and if he can just become a little bit more consistent shooting from behind the arc, you know, that's a guy that we could see being part of the core for a long time. So for me, it's by far and away been Jalen Suggs when you add, you know, the defensive impact that he brings as well. He's just been awesome all year long.
He's just a maniac, too.
He is.
Like, I've loved watching him play since Gonzaga, but when you like flip on a Magic game, you just feel his presence in like every possession that he's a part of. Like, I just love watching that guy.
That the way that he like interacts with the crowd, you know, mm-hmm. we've been lucky enough to have him on our show a few times, and he loves that aspect. You know, the basketball floor is sort of his release, you know, where he can, you know, get out, you know, emotions that maybe you can't get, you know, in your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And just the tenacity that he plays with, really looking forward to seeing whatever team that we match up against in the playoffs, because I'm sure their fans are going to hate Jalen Suggs pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But we relish in that, and we're looking forward to that. And he's just been a blast to watch this year.
So one of the newcomers to the team is rookie Anthony Black, who is one of only five rookies to play at least 1,000 minutes while being on a winning team. How did you feel about that pick last summer, and what has surprised you most about his game?
Yeah, the pick really came out of left field for me in particular. It's been a real lesson in the belief that a lot of Magic fans have in this front office. It's just, mm-hmm. hey, just these guys know what they're doing. They have a clear-cut vision for this team. And even if you can't see it in the moment, over the course of time, it's probably going to play out and show you why. Because I went into the draft last year, like Markelle Fultz is our starting point guard. Jalen Suggs is probably going to start at shooting guard. We have Cole Anthony. We have Gary Harris as our backcourt off the bench. And then all of a sudden it was like Anthony Black, where does he sort of fit in? And it's become pretty apparent this year that Markelle Fultz probably isn't the long-term, you know, starter for this team. Is Anthony Black that? I don't really know. I think it's going to take some more years of being, you know, patient with Anthony Black and developing him and sort of bringing him along slowly. But especially when Markelle Fultz was out, you know, for the big chunk at the beginning of the year, Anthony Black, you know, played a lot of basketball for the Magic and was a big part of them going on that 9-game win streak earlier in the year. And he's been awesome. He's been awesome defensively. I believe he's shooting right around 40% from the 3-point line, although it's at very low volume. The flashes that he's shown on that end, really encouraging, you know, projecting him being a viable, you know, offensive option, you know, moving into the future.
Yeah. What is the view on his shot? I mean, he's taken 87 threes in 60 games. So it's like you said, it's like really low volume. Like, how are defenses reacting to it? Are they reacting to it? Like, from like what you've seen from his shooting?
They're not reacting to him.
Yeah.
They're leaving him open. You know, it's really low volume, and, the defenses are sort of the belief like, hey, if this kid is going to be the one to kill us from behind the arc, then so be it. You know, they're still very focused on, you know, Paolo or Franz when he's sharing the floor with those guys. But for a guy that was deemed as basically a non-shooter coming out of college, him being able to show that potential in his first year, is he going to be a 40% three-point shooter at high volume? Probably not. But he's so much further along than a lot of us thought he would be in his first year. So it's pretty encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Paolo made his first All-Star game this season and leads the Magic in total points, rebounds, and assists. Where did he make his biggest developmental gains in his second season?
I think it's really from a playmaking, you know, aspect. I think, you know, right now he's leading the team in, like, you know, points, rebounds, and assists per game. But that was a big focus of his this offseason. He realized that teams were loading up on him, that they were double and sometimes even triple teaming him towards the end of last year. And he knew that for this team to take a big step forward, he was going to have to get better at making those reads and knowing where to go with the basketball even before those defenses, you know, reacted to him. So now it's pretty regular. You know, he gets the ball, you know, anywhere near the paint, takes a couple of dribbles, and, you know, the guard is coming in and collapsing, and he's either kicking it out or swinging it to the other side for a three. So I think just really from a playmaking perspective, he's put a big emphasis on being more of a vocal leader this year. His experience with Team USA this past summer, he mm-hmm. speaks to that as being a big part of that. But just like overall as a playmaker, knowing where to go with the ball and making quicker decisions this year, still has a bit to clean up there. Can still get a little bit sloppy. Like the Paolo Banchero jump pass definitely has become a thing. Like he loves to leave his feet and make passes, but they don't always have great results. So Still a couple of things to clean up on, but it's been really encouraging just like the growth that he's made in that regard.
Yeah, so if there is a knock on Paolo, it's efficiency. He's shooting under 50% on twos this season. How much of that, of the efficiency struggles, do you attribute to the lack of spacing for the Magic?
I attribute a lot of it to the lack of spacing and just like the lack of offensive threats in general. Like if he's not sharing the floor with Franz, we made the trip to Charlotte last week when they took on the Hornets, and like the amount that they were doubling and at times tripling, was pretty eye opening. Being as close as we were most of the games, we're watching on TV, and there are certain things that you notice in person that you may not notice on the broadcast. But yeah, I think the spacing has a huge part to play in that. I was hoping that we would make a move at the deadline this year to try to create more spacing and get some more shooting in this lineup as we get ready to make the playoff run. But heading into this offseason, I think the playoffs are going to be really eye-opening for this front office in terms of exactly what, who might need to be moved and what pieces we may need to bring in next year, because that's going to be the next step, just sort of optimizing what Paolo does well, what Franz does well. And the shooting and the spacing, I think, is going to be a big hand in that. I would attribute to it sometimes Paolo, if a couple of jump shots fall, he's feeling pretty good. And he's like, all right, I'm going to take this 16-foot turnaround, with Jaylen Brown in my face. And to his credit, that's a shot that he can make. But sometimes you'd like to see him, take a better shot. But yeah, spacing is absolutely going to help Paolo.
So thinking about the roster, it feels like they're one big piece and maybe an additional shooter away from really establishing themselves as a top team in the East. When Magic fans discuss the future of this roster, are there any specific names they talk about as trade or free agency targets? And more broadly, like what type of player for that like final big piece do you think the Magic need?
Yeah, in terms of like a final big piece, not quite sure on that. Like a lot of us are hoping that Franz Wagner is going to be that other big piece next to Paolo Banchero, although he has a lot of room to grow as well. Right now, I think mainly is like Wendell Carter Jr. Is he the starter, at center long term? If Jonathan Isaac can stay healthy, I think he's played 49 games up to this point in the season, or 41 games, somewhere around there. I think he can end up around like 59 games if he ends up playing in most of the games to close the season over the last 16 games here. But if he can stay healthy, like is he the long-term answer at five? Markel Fultz, it doesn't really look like he's the answer. A lot of the trade pieces that we thought we had earlier in the year, the deadline came and went, and a guy like Gary Harris, he's expiring. Markel Fultz, he's expiring. Those are no longer trade pieces. Those guys can leave for nothing. But a guy like Tyus Jones, a guy who leads the league in assist to turnover ratio, every couple of weeks it seems like he's having a 13, 15 assist game, no turnovers, shoots the ball pretty well, doesn't exactly fit the Magic's philosophy defensively. But when we talk about a true point guard, a guy that can just really help set the table and go and get a basket when he needs to and knock down open threes, a guy like Tyus Jones is a name that Magic fans have been talking about throughout the season. He's going to be a free agent this summer as well. But right now, we're sort of at the point where we want to see just like what other ancillary pieces could elevate Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. If that's a guy that can just organize the offense, or if it's just surrounding those guys with shooting, is it more of a guy who's going to be more of an above the rim threat and true rim protector from the five? Could that be Jonathan Isaac? Is that somebody, maybe like Nick Claxton, this offseason? Those are some of the names that Magic fans have discussed throughout the season. But really, for me, it's going to be like shoring up that starting lineup. Like get a point guard that's potentially going to be here for a long time. Is it going to be Anthony Black? Do you get a point guard that's going to be a stopgap for a couple of years while you continue to develop Anthony Black? What does Jed Howard look like? Jed Howard's a guy that we took 11th overall last year, and he spent most of his time in Osceola with the G League affiliate of the Magic, and he's been playing pretty well. So the hope is next year that he's going to be ready for rotation minutes. So you still got some of those guys that the jury is still out on. But yeah, in terms of like taking that next step, you have to know who your starting five is going to be for the foreseeable future. And I think there are some questions that need to be answered there.
Yeah, you mentioned Franz. What's the general sentiment about his efficiency this season? We talked about Paolo and like the lack of spacing kind of hurting his game. Is it something similar? Is there something else going on there? Because he's shooting 29% from three, 47% from the field. What's the general sentiment there?
Yeah, the general sentiment is we don't know exactly what's going on with Franz. Had a really rough shooting stretch to start the year. Was shooting the ball pretty well. We saw a pretty significant uptick like right before the All-Star break, but it's been pretty cold, you know, especially from behind the arc since the All-Star break. And like going back to like, there's a pretty significant drop off with Franz versus teams above 500. And then versus teams that are below 500. So we don't know if it's just like the lengthy summer, you know, that he had with the, you know, Germany's World Cup run, or quite exactly what's going on there. He's had an issue, and he's talked about this at various points throughout the season, just about the arc on his shot. Like a lot of his 3-point attempts just come off very flat, hits, you know, the front rim a lot of the times. And he's been working with some of the Magic shooting coaches, and they use the term like tickle the stars or tickle the sky. You know, he's got to have that elevated follow through, make sure that he's getting that arc on that, on his 3-point shot. But yeah, Franz has been a little bit of a question this year. We're still believers that at some point he's going to be able to turn it around, and he has shown stretches of being, you know, efficient from behind the arc. But yeah, to be honest with you, we don't exactly know what has been going on with Franz this year, but we still have a lot of faith that he's going to be able to figure it out.
Yeah. So the Magic are fifth in the East, which would see them match up with the Knicks in the first round. Orlando's won the series 3-1, but that last game against the Knicks doesn't give you a ton of confidence. What do you think the Magic's matchup with the Knicks would look like? And is there like another team that you prefer a first round matchup with?
There are a couple of teams I think that we would probably prefer a first round matchup with. One of the things is like there's a lot of like context and nuance around that 3-1, you know, season series.
Yeah.
Like earlier in the season, like they obviously, you know, like they didn't have Jalen Brunson for one of those games. They didn't have Julius Randle for a couple of those games. And then that last game, like no Randle, no OG Anunoby. Now the team looks completely different. And yeah, it was the Magic's worst offensive game of the season. And I think even more disappointing was coming off of that game, you have another big game against Indiana two nights later, and then the offense is just doesn't exist that night either. So that was a little bit concerning. The Magic have been doing a good job of taking care of teams below 500, but you know, below 500 against teams that are above 500. So no, I think really we haven't gotten a look at how our team matches up with like the new look Knicks, right? With OG Anunoby, with some of those other guys that they, you know, acquire from Detroit as well. I probably just want to like steer clear of that matchup if I'm being like perfectly honest. In the playoffs, like possessions are going to slow down. Teams are just going to cram the paint. They're going to dare the Magic to knock down threes. And although they have the potential to get hot for, you know, a game or two, you just don't really see a playoff series that is going to go that well, really panning out for the Magic. So a team like the Pacers, although we didn't really play them that well this past Sunday, you know, you blew them out, you know, a couple of times this season. And just the difference is like they want to get out and run. They want to score a ton. They're one of the worst teams in the league at protecting the paint. And those are all things that the Magic are really good at, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of like getting into the paint, like that's really what they want to see. And then you just wonder about other teams like Milwaukee, you know, with sort of their lack of depth. Like, sure, Dame and Giannis can go for almost 40 for the entire series and kill you. But if you're able to contain those guys at all, like what does a playoff series look like? Like yeah. When you think of some of the pieces that we have to throw at, you know, Giannis, if it's, you know, Wendell or, you know, Jonathan Isaac, you're not going to stop those guys. But if you can just slow them down a little bit, and we have a lot of different looks that we could throw at, you know, Dame when it comes to Jalen Suggs and Anthony Black, Gary Harris, Markelle Fultz. The Heat, another team that I probably want to steer away from just because we know that those guys are like the ultimate playoff risers.
Yeah.
And that's the in-state rivalry, right? Like I don't despise any other team on the face of the earth more than the Miami Heat. And just the thought of losing to the Miami Heat in a playoff series, would probably keep me up for weeks. So yeah, I guess the short answer is, yeah, we'd like to stay away from the Knicks if at all possible. But the playoffs, you know, that's where you're going to get exposed. That's where the front office is going to see like, okay, these are the holes with this team. We know exactly what we need to address. And part of me wants that, like expose the Magic as much as you possibly can, put us in a position where we know what we need to go out and what moves need to be made in free agency and what parts of this roster are core pieces and you want to hold on to and build around. And, you know, what else do you sort of need to swap out?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for answering all of our magic questions. But it is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat Magic Edition. Our challenger this week for Jonathan Osborne, host of the Six Man Show. Jonathan, you've played this before, so how it works, I've come up with 8 questions about the Magic. You're going to give me a number between 1 and 8. It'll correspond to a question. Some are easy, some are hard. If you get it right, you'll get at least 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1, and we'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. So to start us off, I just need a number between 1 and 8.
I want to start this by prefacing that this time I'm going to be diligent about actually listening to the questions because ooh, I know that I lost last time.
That's a good strategy.
I misheard the question. So this time we're going to go with 5 for Paolo Banchero, our all-star this year. We'll start with number 5.
Question number 5. There have been 23 two-man lineups to play at least 500 minutes together for the Magic this season. The best of those lineups has a plus 13.5 net rating. And in comparison, like the second best is somewhere around like plus 5. So this two-man lineup blows the other ones out of the water. Who is in that lineup? And you get 1 point per correct answer.
I am going to go, I don't know that these guys have spent a ton of time together here, but I'm going to go Franz Wagner and Jonathan Isaac.
Your first answer was Franz Wagner. That is incorrect. Yeah. Means Andrew, you have a chance to steal 2 points.
Oh my. What about Jonathan Isaac and Paolo Banchero?
Well, you said Jonathan Isaac first, so you do get a point for that, but it is not Banchero. It is Cole Anthony.
Oh.
Jonathan Isaac and Cole Anthony, a plus 13.5.
Wow.
The bench lineup. That makes sense.
The bench. Yeah, his all of Jonathan Isaac's on-off numbers are absurd. Yeah.
I knew J.I. had to be involved. I should have went J.I. first. But yeah, that's not surprising.
All right, Andrew, you've controlled the board.
Number 1.
Question number 1. This is a fun one, Andrew. The Magic, as we mentioned, are last in the league in three-pointers made this season with 719. The last time the Magic were number 1 in three-pointers made was the 2011-2012 season. We are going to name every Magic player who hit a three-pointer that season. So how this works, Andrew, you give me a name, then Jonathan will give me a name. We'll go back and forth until one of you stumbles. So these are Magic players from the 2011-2012 season who hit a three-pointer.
11-12, okay. Jameer Nelson.
That is correct, Andrew. 87 threes. Jonathan, you're up.
J.J. Redick.
That is correct. 112 threes. Back to Andrew.
I believe this was a Ryan Anderson season. Ryan Anderson.
Oh, it sure was. 166 threes leading the team, Andrew. Back to Jonathan.
I am going to go. Why am I blanking here? I don't know if he was back by this point because I know we acquired him again. I'm going to go Hedo Turkoglu.
Hedo Turkoglu, 91 threes in fourth. Back to Andrew.
Oh, boy.
Starting to get a little dicey, Andrew?
It's dicey. I'm being diced right now. I think Jason Richardson was on one of these teams in this era. I'll say Jason Richardson. I can't remember if it was this year or not.
That is correct, Andrew. He was third on the team, 102 threes. Now, we're back to Jonathan. And Jonathan, there are seven names remaining, guys who hit at least one three.
I am like running really low on names.
I don't know if he, I'm going to say Quentin Richardson.
Q Rich had 42 threes that season.
Oh,
all right, Andrew,
gosh.
Back to you. You guys are doing great. Six names remaining. I will tell you that four of them hit two or fewer threes. So the easy names are few and far between at this point.
Oh, my gosh. This is like one of the names that maybe didn't even take a three. But like I can't really think of anybody else that was on these teams. Was Big Baby? Did Big Baby take any threes?
Big Baby Davis hit two threes that season. Wow. Back to Jonathan.
I am going to go Brandon Bass.
Brandon Bass. Did not hit a three.
Weren't they traded for each other?
They were.
Yeah.
The other names on the list. The only other name that hit a lot of threes, Chris Duhon, hit 50.
Chris Duhon.
Von Wafer.
Von Wafer. 14. I didn't even remember Von Wafer on the Magic.
Justin Harper. Have you heard that name before? Hit two threes.
I've heard the name, but no.
Ish Smith hit a single three, and Larry Hughes hit a three.
I cannot imagine Larry Hughes. Or even Von Wafer, honestly. I just imagine Von Wafer in a Rockets uniform.
Okay. So those are the names. Jonathan.
Not doing well
here. Control the board.
I'm going to go two.
Question number two. One statistical oddity for the Orlando Magic is that they do not have a single player averaging more than 7 rebounds per game. There is only one other team in the league that can say that. Who is that other team? Not a single player averaging more than 7 rebounds.
A single player averaging 7 rebounds. I'm going to go try to go small here. Poor rebounding team. I'm literally just going to throw a name out there. I'm just going to say the Memphis Grizzlies.
Well, Jonathan, you threw out the correct name because it is the Memphis Grizzlies.
Wow.
Nice pull. Yeah. Does that make sense when you think about it? Because Triple J isn't like a huge rebounder and he's a big man.
Do the Thunder have somebody averaging more than 7 rebounds?
Yeah, Andrew. Chet.
I didn't think he was over 7.
I'll check it right now. He is at 7.8. He's got room to spare, Andrew.
Wow. Okay. Wait,
there you doubt Chet. Okay. All right, Andrew, you control the board. The score is 3-2.
Number three.
Question number three. Which Magic player converts the highest percentage of his attempts at the rim on the team?
Wow.
He has a team high. He shoots a team high 78% on rim attempts.
Oh, my.
What would that be? That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. 78%. What about Mo Wagner?
Mo Wagner, Andrew, that is absolutely incorrect.
He got my hopes up there, Al.
The delivery was a little deceptive.
All right, Jonathan, you have a chance to steal for one.
I'm going to say Goga Batadze.
Ooh, Goga.
Goga makes a lot of sense. He's a big man, but it's also not him. Would you believe the player shooting 78% at the rim this season is none other than Gary Harris? 78%.
Good for you, Gary.
What's going on there? How many attempts is it?
Not a lot.
It doesn't matter, Andrew. let me see. I'll tell you what his the percentage of his overall shots that are at the rim. Scrolling down here. Gary Harris, 19% of his shots overall. So not an insignificant amount.
Not insignificant.
Yeah, a fifth of all of his shots. 78% is pretty good.
Shouts to Gary.
Okay. Jonathan.
I will go four.
Question number four. This is a fun one. What is Joe Ingles' career high in points? Now, you get to choose who answers first. So you can answer first, and then Andrew can go higher or lower. Or Andrew can answer first, and then you go higher or lower. But if Andrew gets it exactly correct, he would get a bonus point.
So I am going to throw this to Andrew.
All right, Andrew. Career high for Jinglin' Joe Ingles.
37.
37 points is where Andrew sets the bar. Jonathan, would you like to go higher or lower?
I'm going to say lower.
Andrew, you were within 3 points.
Oh.
And unfortunately, Joe Ingles has never had a 40-point game.
Oh,
he has had
no.
a 34-point game,
oh.
which means Jonathan gets the points and has moved into the lead.
Dang.
4-3 with 3 questions remaining.
Jinglin' Joe.
Wow, you had a lot of faith in Joe to guess 37.
Well, almost always it's more than I think.
Right.
Almost every single time. Number six.
Question number six. Glad you picked this one, Andrew. According to Pat Williams, the first GM of the Magic, Stuff the Magic Dragon, Orlando's mascot, was not always going to be a dragon. Several other ideas were strongly considered. Which of the following was not one of the ideas that the Magic considered for their mascot? Okay. So they picked a dragon, but they had a lot of other ideas. I'm going to give you 4 ideas. One of them is fake. Mm-hmm. Was it a rabbit, a wizard, a playing card, or a magic bean? Once again, a rabbit, a wizard, a playing card, or a magic bean. Which of those is fake, Andrew?
A bean.
I hope you're right. I really hope you're right.
A magic bean. Unfortunately, they strongly considered
really?
Making their mascot a magic bean.
Big old bean. That would actually
That'd have been cool.
That would have been awesome. I would have loved to have a big old bean.
Okay, Jonathan, this narrows it down to 3 for you. Rabbit, wizard, or playing
card? I'll say the playing card.
Jonathan, that is correct for a point. Man. It is now 5-3. Wow, Jonathan, come from behind.
I just really wanted to say bean, but imagine the playing card makes the most sense. Like, yeah. What are you?
Why? I thought a playing card would be a cool mascot. In fact, I feel like I've seen playing card mascots.
You
wouldn't have a lot of flexibility because he'd be like in this rectangle. So that would be tough, but he could fall on people. That'd be cool. All right, Jonathan, 2 questions left. Question number 7, question number
8. I will go with number 7.
He could crush people. Question number 7. The Magic have the number 1 free throw rate in the league. Led by Banchero's 7.1 free throw attempts per game. Banchero does not have the highest free throw rate on the team, however. That would be this player who takes 0.41 free throws for every 1 field goal attempt. Who is that player? And this isn't like some guy who only played a couple minutes.
Yeah, Mo Wagner.
Mo Wagner, that is incorrect.
Are you serious? I said that with so much confidence, too.
You did say that with a lot of... It's so much confidence that I'm looking it up.
Wow.
Just to make sure that I didn't get the read across the row incorrectly. Andrew, who would you like to guess? Oh, hey, guess what? Mo was number 3. He's barely behind Paulo. So it was a good guess. But there's one guy even better than both of them.
Wow. What about Goga?
Goga Batadze. Andrew, that is correct.
Yes!
Which means it is 5-4 heading into the final question. Oh. Andrew, you get first dibs.
Okay.
If you get this question correct, you win the week.
Oh.
Okay? It all comes down to this. Paolo Banchero had his first career triple-double this season. He only needs 2 more to be tied for 2nd all-time for most triple-doubles in franchise history. Name 2 of the 3 players in Magic history that have recorded at least 3 triple-doubles.
Oh, man.
And you got to give me both names to get the points. So 2 of the 3 players who have recorded at least three triple doubles as Orlando.
Three triple doubles. Okay. We've got some candidates for sure.
Okay.
Goodness.
And you can talk them out. It doesn't matter at this point, you know.
I know. The names that are popping in my head, Hito Turkoglu,
Von Wafer.
Von Wafer, Big Baby. No. Obviously, like Shaq and Penny are in my head just because like they put up great stats. I don't know if they did enough. I don't know. Also, Dwight Howard. I don't know if he got three with blocks.
I feel like he got one against the Thunder.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm remembering, is that he got one against the Thunder. It's so hard to get the triple-double with blocks. I just don't know that he did it three times. Also, T-Mac is like another one that like pops in my head. How many are there that did this?
Three. And you just have to give me two.
Oh, shoot. I'll say T-Mac and Turkoglu.
Andrew, Hito Turkoglu did it. Oh, he had three. But T-Mac did not, which means Jonathan wins the week 5-4. Unless, Jonathan, you want to throw on a bonus point. Elfrid Payton.
Elfrid Payton.
He's actually the franchise leader.
Mr.
March, Elfrid Payton. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And the other name
is
Vooch.
Vooch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Congrats to Jonathan. 6-4, the final
redemption.
Redemption.
Pure redemption.
Stay tuned for the rubber match. Next year at some point.
What a list of players that have done it. And like you have like these like mega stars like Shaq and Dwight Howard and Penny Hardaway and T-Mac. And it's like, no. Vooch and Hito Turkoglu and Elfrid Payton.
That's right. Rub it in. Yeah.
Oh, pain. Hey, go listen to the Six Man Show. It's a great podcast.
Thank you.
I would say that most people don't know a ton about the Orlando Magic. And if you want to learn about the Orlando Magic, it's a great resource. And they have Paolo Banchero on their show. So, I mean, you got to go listen to it. Jonathan, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Andrew, I just want to ask really quickly. Those are Shaq Pepsi bottles behind you.
Yeah.
Respect.
Yeah, I was a huge Shaq fan growing up. And so, yeah, I only have five. One of them.
I only have five, actually. One of them I have five.
Oh, really?
Well. I don't have the whole six pack.
No. Wow. Yeah. That is kind of strange. That kind of freaks me out a little bit, to be honest.
Which is funny because you could go on, like, I could buy the whole six pack on eBay anytime that I want. But I'm like, no, I'm happy with five.
Good with five. Shout out to Jay who brought those over to me after he found those in his mom's house. So
awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for having me again. Really, really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you guys.
All right, Andrew, that was Magic Week, but we get to choose a new team this week. Mm-hmm. We have 15 teams remaining.
Oh.
Seven of them are teams that are completely out of the playoff picture. Detroit, Washington, Toronto, Brooklyn, Memphis, Houston, Utah.
Yeah.
So we basically have a 50-50 shot.
That's a lot. That's way too many.
It's way too many. Now, some of those, I actually, you know what? I mentioned Detroit earlier.
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't be an awful one to get because at least their young guys are healthy.
Yeah.
They're playing. Well, we get a team like Memphis.
And we get to talk to James Edwards, too. I mean, like, that's pretty cool.
That's true. A team like Memphis, with all their injuries, it'd be a challenging week. Okay.
It would be tough. And
let's spin the wheel.
They just guaranteed it.
Let's see who we get. The Wheel Fandom team for this week will be the Brooklyn Nets.
The Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, man.
I guess the only solace is that we get to bring in Mike Smeltz back on the Glue Guys podcast.
Let me see who they're playing this week. We get a Wemby game. Okay. We get at Indiana. Then Wemby on NBA TV, national TV game. for the Nets and Spurs. Then Zion and the Pelicans on Tuesday, and then a game in Milwaukee against the Bucks on next Thursday night.
Okay. Okay. We can do this. That's a rough one. Hey, something that you can do is leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it here on the show. Just like this one from Nick is the worst. 5-star. Slam and Jam is dodging that weird Wizards guy. Bring back that weird Wizards guy. He's a superstar. Let him shine, you cowards. P.S. Bring back the Baltimore Bullets. Thank you so much for that review.
Andrew, I swear that like 90% of our reviews are from one Wizards fan who keeps changing his account. Is that possible?
This one's different. There, we do have one guy that likes to leave reviews, but this is a different one. This is a different one that just loves Josh Robbins. This one is from Baller Dude, spelled B-W-L-R Dude. 5-star. Always a good listen. I've been listening to Andrew and Alex for a while. I enjoy their insights to the week of basketball and their interactions with the guests. But the highlight for me is the trivia game. Even though y'all make me feel old for not remembering some of the fringe guys from the NBA when I was your age, I'm 54, I highly recommend it. Keep up the good work, fellas. Hashtag Rip City. And then this last one from Jonathan Zielinski, 5-star. I'm not even interested in most of the teams you cover is the title of this one.
Okay.
But I listen anyways because of several factors. The dulcet sounds of Alex Spears' narration. You should read audiobooks, Al.
Thank you.
Hey, shout out. Even when I know that you're going to say that is incorrect, I'm still a little surprised. The self-effacing nature of Andrew Schlecht, you clearly know a lot, but your humility makes you accessible. Lastly, you get great guests that are very at ease and willing to try things that most would avoid, like testing their knowledge about a team they're supposed to be experts in. Great job, guys. Keep up the great work. Wow. Some really nice reviews.
I wish that last one would have told us who they wanted us to talk about. You know, maybe we could have made some adjustments.
Yeah, let me see if I... Yeah.
Maybe they're a Nets fan. That would be perfect.
Hey, if you're a Nets fan, this is your upcoming week. It's going to be great.
Knowing our reviews, though, they're probably a Wizards fan.
Yeah, probably a Wizards fan. Feels like 75% of our listeners are Wizards fans. Thanks so much for listening to this week of the Slam and Jam. We'll be back next week. Tune in to March Madness. Be sure to subscribe at theathletic.com/NBA show and get all of that content for this upcoming week. Hope you guys enjoy your weekend and the basketball. We'll talk to you guys again next Friday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.